is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
I'm doing great, Wes. Looking forward to talking Heat basketball.
Haven't talked since Christmas. How was your holiday?
Oh, it was great, especially considering the victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers. But other than that, I got everything I wanted.
Game on at all? Or what did Santa bring you? A toe cookie?
He was very generous this year. I actually got, my parents got his tickets to go to Disney World, of all things.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was very surprising. I'm drawing a blank here, but I got a little bit of everything. I actually got a lot of books. I got some cookware, which I actually needed, which is very cool. And I can't recall anything else off the top of my head right now. But
what kind of cookware?
Like I said, you're asking a lot of details here.
Well, what do you like to cook? I don't know.
I like to cook whatever I'm in the mood for. Just new pots, pans, it's the all white ceramic set. You know, we don't talk about non-stick, very cool.
Nice.
Yeah, very sleek, state-of-the-art kind of stuff. And very, very looking forward to breaking that in over the next few weeks.
I got a lot of socks this year. I legitimately got 5 or 6 pairs of socks.
I got one very cool pair that actually have a woodpecker on them. I don't even know where they found it.
Woody the Woodpecker?
No. They're very nice dress socks with a full pileated woodpecker, a red pileated woodpecker on it.
I was looking at these socks by Stance, and they have like this whole line that has like all the NBA players on them, and I really wanted this pair with Dr. J on them. They're like this cool like black and white photo that basically is just like printed onto these socks. It's really cool.
I haven't seen them.
Yeah, I kind of want it. Like, it's kind of cool to be, like, walking with basketball players on your feet. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of that. I don't know why.
Are you a sock collector?
I guess I am now. I wasn't planning on it.
It's kind of been decided for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that everybody's turned the podcast off.
is it too late to hit re-record on it?
Yeah, we probably should just do that. What did you think about that Cleveland game? I mean, that was, where does that rank in your top games of the season?
Oh,
the Christmas game.
Yeah, I'd have to say definitely top three, maybe even top one, to be honest with you. Because I think we had kind of tapered our expectations a little bit considering Chris Bosh was going to be out. I know that gone on the record and said that he would play not only the game before against Philadelphia, which, you know, we lost, of course, but that we would go ahead and he would play and have a big game on Christmas Day against the Cleveland Cavaliers. That didn't happen. And so I was really, you know, disappointed about the news that he wasn't going to be able to make it.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, here we go. Either we're going to get a very classic battle between Wade and James, or we're going to get our butts handed to us. And fortunately, it was the former rather than the latter. And it was just a very encouraging game. You got the Luol Deng game. I mean, that might have been his best game of the season just because of the stakes. And I know it's ridiculous when you're looking at a regular season game, but it was really a statement for him, you know, because he's been blasted, not just by us, but by everybody in the media because of his inconsistency. He hasn't been the factor that a lot of people expected him to be this season. So it was just a really solid game from him, 25 points, great defense on James. I know LeBron eventually got his points, but, you know, it was mostly at the free throw line. And it's just a really solid effort overall. It was great to see the home crowd engaged and very, very entertaining game.
I thought that we didn't talk enough about the dang revenge game thing. It was all about LeBron coming back to Miami. I don't think anybody really talked about the dang revenge thing, and it totally just kind of bubbled up in the game. And everybody was like, oh, right, there's that thing kind of going on here, too.
Well, you know, he just doesn't strike you as the kind of player that seeks revenge, I guess, because of that reputation of being a pretty good citizen and a nice guy and everything else. But, you know, he's got to have some kind of professional pride, and he's always played James tough defensively in the past.
I liked the result more than the game itself. And I don't know if it was because just the anxiety that came with the game or the fact I hate watching this team without Bosch.
Yeah.
It's just really ugly. That game was a little bit better just because Wade was doing his thing. And when Wade's doing his thing and he can just kind of like have the basketball and not really worry about ball movement and stuff, then the game doesn't become as ugly. But when Wade's not really going, it's just dreadful to watch. I really liked the result of that game more so than I liked watching the game, if that makes sense. I actually did my top three rankings of my favorite three games this season, and I think I have Dallas in this order, Dallas, Toronto, and that Orlando game last night, even though we lost. I think those are my three favorite games of the season.
Really?
Just in terms of watching, like games that I just enjoyed watching. I didn't enjoy a minute of that Cleveland. Well, I enjoyed like the last couple minutes when it was obvious we were going to win. That was about it.
Yeah,
it was probably more of me just being like an anxious, neurotic, crazy person. But
well, I mean, there's always something about the Christmas Day game that you get psyched up for. At least I personally do. It's a big game, and it's an exciting opportunity.
I should enjoy it more, but I don't.
No, that's fine. I at least I agree with you as far as the Dallas and the Toronto game. Although I have to disagree with you on the Magic game just because of the result. Yeah. And you know what else bothered me, though, about the Cavs game was all of the talk leading up to the whole, the video that they were showing for LeBron.
Yeah.
What'd you think about that?
That was way overblown. Mm-hmm. I just, like, they showed the video, but what actually got me was seeing him on the free throw line, and he almost started crying. Like, it just, or that's what it looked like. Like, he got emotional, and that, I really did appreciate that. Just the fact that he didn't, like, you could tell he's trying to hold it back just for, you know, being a professional basketball player. You don't want to start, like, crying on the court. But
wow.
I thought when they flashed to him at the free throw line when they were playing that video, I definitely saw emotion there.
Okay. Now I'm either I didn't see that or I'm totally misinterpreted because, I mean, I'm happy to hear that because part of my complaint about James has been that I always thought a lot of his emotional responses felt contrived and artificial. And so if he actually displayed something on Christmas Day, that's great. More power to him, and you know, at least there's a little bit of sincerity there.
You know, he actually said something at the end of the game in the interview, though. I don't know if you heard that, but he said, and I noticed it during the game, and then he kind of, and I wasn't sure what I was seeing, and then after the game, he kind of confirmed it by saying, "Go back, and there's probably some tape of me at the free throw line. Go back, and you'll probably see me get a little emotional and try to hold it back." And he said something to himself like, "Get it together, LeBron," or something like. And he did. He mouthed something. I couldn't make it out on the TV, but
okay.
Yeah, it was actually really interesting. I was actually like shocked to see that.
And what about the whole response by the fans?
Yeah, I don't know. That was fine. And you knew they were going to cheer, right?
I wasn't sure. Not till the very beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. You know, at the end they could have just said, "You know what? It's Christmas Day." I feel like the national media kind of forced their hand a little bit in that the scrutiny was already there on the fans for whatever reason,
yeah,
instead of on LeBron, that, you know, all of a sudden the onus was on the fan to prove that they were quote unquote good fans and they were more classy than they'd shown in the past. So I kind of resented that a little bit. Yeah. Just because I'm a big fan of like, oh, don't put me in a pigeonhole. And don't dictate to me how I should feel. Don't spoon-feed my emotions to me. I'll act however I want to. And if you're going to tell me how to act, then I'm just going to give you the big F you. And I would have booed loudly and proudly had that been the case, had I been there. Instead, I wasn't. I was watching from home with a slice of pizza in hand. And, nice. You know, that's the only way we watch it on Christmas Day. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
You do a pizza tradition? That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's one pizza joint in Miami that we always order from on Christmas Day.
Do I know it? Is it that famous one? What's it called?
In Miami, it's called Cazola's. I don't know if you've heard of it or not.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's on 17th Avenue in US 1. This is a great advertisement for them if they want to sponsor any future podcast.
I know where that is. And what's it called?
Cazola's Pizza.
I'm going to write that down. I'm going to see if my dad knows that one.
The thing about that, and they give out samples. So while you're waiting, you place your order there, and then they have slices of pie that they just cut up into little segments, and they just lay them out there so that you're stuffing your face with samples so that by the time you actually get your pizza, you might actually be stuffed already.
Wow.
But yeah, either way, it's a great place. You're coming home from the beach. It's right off of 95 leading to US-1. So you're like, you know, you're hungover basically, or still a little smashed at that point. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. They're open, and there you are stuffing your gob with, you know, cheesy, greasy pizza. It's fantastic.
That sounds like it's coming from experience.
Oh, on numerous occasions, my friend. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's a great place. And you know what? It was one of the few places that was actually open during, I forgot which hurricane hit Miami at some point in the last 10 years, but they were one of the few restaurants that was open, and I went by there to get gas because there was a gas station across the street. It might have been. It might have been.
That one that knocked us out for like 3 weeks.
You got it. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that was it. So they were open for whatever reason, and they had a line out the door, of course. But they still had the samples, and I went in there like the cheap bastard I am and grabbed a face full of samples and walked out. I didn't even order anything. So there goes our sponsorship opportunities, I think.
From Gonzalez. What were we talking about again?
I think.
Oh, you're watching with Gonzalez Pizza. You're watching again. Yeah. You're booing. You're booing your television.
Yeah, I was. Well, I just, you know, I didn't like how everybody started tweeting about it afterwards, saying, "Oh, classy job by the Miami fans,"
as if we were some bunch
of troglodytes that, you know, don't show up to games and stuff like that. And also, like, we're showing a
good job, Heat fans. You did the right thing here. I was like they're puppies, like they're just dogs. Like, oh, we're finally potty trained. Thank you, nation. We are finally deserving.
Yeah, we didn't pee all over the American Airlines seats. And we're finally getting our reward online, and that's exactly what matters to us. So.
Yeah, as long as we're okay on Twitter, that's right. Yeah. You know, there's a certain thing about being a Miami fan, and I think it all just starts from the whole hurricane identity, I think, is just ingrained in that area. There's just kind of, I feel like there's that identity there, just like that whole hurricane in the 80s. Yeah, hate us, we'll love it if you want to hate us. That's fine. We're going to be the enemy. We're okay with it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's it's just a really Miami thing. That's kind of our identity. People say, oh, Miami fans don't really have a sports identity. That's the identity, is the Hurricanes. So my only thing with the LeBron thing was I really didn't care if they booed or cheered. I was hoping they would cheer because it would just turn into a big deal if they booed, and then I'd feel obligated to write about it. And I didn't. And I didn't write a single column on the cheering or the booing. I'm actually really glad that Chris Posada did write about it, and he did a really, really fantastic job writing about it. It was a little bit of a different perspective. He just said, like, just whatever. He basically just said, LeBron should be appreciated. You should remember it. You should appreciate everything that happened. And at the end, he said, but I'll probably be booing him. I love the honesty of that, because that's how I felt. I always appreciated LeBron. More so because it's just such a big part of NBA history, and I just was glad that the Heat were a part of that, and I was glad to be a fan, a part of that, you know, and to be able to just watch that on an 82-game plus playoff basis. But I'll be lying if I didn't jump up at the end of the game and said, suck it, LeBron.
You too, huh?
And that's just sports, right? Like, what else am I supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the nature of it. You root for him when he's on your side and when you're not. I mean, how many players are like that throughout the league? You know, guys that you know you're going to hate when they're playing on other rosters, but if they were on your team, you know, I always think of guys like, you know, Joakim Noah or Kevin Garnett, maybe even more thuggish types, if you want to call them that, David West.
You absolutely, we would love Joakim Noah in Miami if he was on the Heat, but because he plays for the Bulls, we can't stand him.
Exactly.
And because he doesn't shower. That too.
Yeah. I can imagine that. Yeah, I think him and Roni Turiaf, I think, don't they have like the stinkiest guys in the league? I think that's the title they may hold.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. You know what? I'm done talking about LeBron.
Okay. That's good. That's a great segue. Let's talk about Chris Bosh at power forward then.
Yes.
All right.
He's amazing. He's amazing.
I loved it. That's why I ranked the Magic game in my top three games, because, as you know, I've been looking forward to the day when the Heat just threw out the whole small ball thing, which was so obviously dead that it was so obviously not working. I was like, can we just move Bosch to power forward and play Chris Anderson at center? And I think it happened at the right minute, where Chris Bosch was coming back from his injury, and Chris Anderson is really starting to look healthy these last I would say, 3 or 4 games, he's really started to look like Chris Anderson, where in the beginning of the season he wasn't playing. He had that little bit in between, and then he missed a bunch of games after that. But he really never looked healthy until, like, right now, and I think he's certainly capable of starting and playing 20 minutes a game, where I wasn't sure if he was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think
we talked about him being, like, a 10 to 15 minute player, unfortunately, and he's complete, like, he just looks much better.
Right? I mean, I don't know if he's dropped some weight or anything like that, but there's almost, I mean, as cliche as it might sound, he's got a little extra spring in his step. Yeah. He's catching lobs. He's climbing over people for rebounds. I mean,
well, he didn't play in the beginning, right? And then what was the injury that he was out for? It was some leg thing, right? Like a thigh thing or something.
Ribs too, right? Didn't he get a rib injury?
Yeah. So I don't know if like his second stint at sitting on the bench was, you know, he came back, didn't look right, maybe wasn't completely ready to go, and they benched him again. And he's had plenty of time to really just recuperate and just get back to playing shape, right? Realize that they didn't need him. It's just the beginning part of the season. Just let him get 100%, and then we'll start playing him. And I think that's what they did. That's just what I assume, because I don't know what else it could be.
And he knocked down a mid-range jumper too, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, it was weird, but they're, you know, he said he was working on that shot during the offseason, right? That's the number one thing he worked on over the offseason, and conditioning, apparently. And they played him a little bit on the elbow. So when they, and I thought that was interesting, because they never did that with him. And he actually would, like, stand on the elbow a little bit opposite of Chris Bosh, and I thought that was really cool, to at least take advantage of his screening abilities. And then there was some cool little actions going on with him and Chris Bosh, and I liked it. Not quite Josh McRoberts' Chris Bosh stuff, but... Right. You know, Chris, he wasn't doing, like, that dribble handoff that was, like, Josh McRoberts' thing, like, right, when he was playing. Right. But he was just setting a lot of picks and doing a good job. And I just love his ability to just get putbacks and do the baseline cuts and roll to the basket. He is so good at rolling to the basket. It's really an underappreciated asset of his game and something that I really think opens up the offense. And I mentioned it in my game notes after the game, how having him, he's a little bit more... Versatile is not the right word, but there's a different flavor you get with Chris Anderson in the game on offense than you do with McRoberts. I feel like Anderson's more of a scoring threat than McRoberts, as weird as that might sound. McRoberts is really like more of a facilitator, a glue guy. I think like Chris Anderson, you just know that you could just run a pick and roll with him, and he's going to do it right. And I just feel like that's such a huge thing, especially in this NBA that's basically just all pick and roll based. Just having him in the middle to do that. And he could do it with a guard, and he could do it with Chris Bosh. I just really like that part of the game when everybody else is trying to space the floor, and Bosh is doing his thing on the elbow, and Wade's going to try to post up or cut, and Deng's going to do his cuts and things like that, or just float out to the three-point line. I just kind of like when he's in the mix. I love the way the offense can just runs with him in it.
Would have expected that. I mean,
right.
You know, we thought he might be, you know, not necessarily done, but not necessarily going to be much of a contributor. And now all of a sudden he's not just starting, but he seems to be thriving somewhat as well. So it was a nice boost considering we were lacking size with Chris Bosh out for a few games. And you're right, he's looked amazing. He's just much more impressive than he has been. Maybe this is his best basketball since he's joined the Heat. Would you go that far? Because, I mean, I think he's playing, if not necessarily as energetically as he has in the past, he might be playing more effectively than ever before in a Heat uniform. And I think that's part of what we can appreciate over the last couple of games when he's been starting. And I hope we continue with this lineup. I mean, obviously, it's predicated on both players staying relatively injury-free, and unless we make some kind of a move for a center player. But, you know, I think at this point, it's a good lineup. It works. You mentioned it last night during the Orlando Magic game. You know, Chris Bosh is going to create so many more mismatches at the power forward position.
Yeah.
And
he's the best power forward in the East, right?
I can't think of anybody that comes close.
Right. I mean, Al Horford's playing well, but he's not really the linchpin of that team anymore in Atlanta. And, yeah.
I mean, production-wise, no, I don't think.
No, absolutely. Production-wise, Chris Bosh has got to be the best. And, I really like the center rotation with Chris Anderson and Hassan Whiteside, and we'll talk about Whiteside a little bit, but what looked like a huge weakness has actually turned into a strength with two additions. If you consider Anderson back from injury and Whiteside, the signing of Whiteside and like his kind of quick acclimation to the team, I would venture to say that center is pretty stable now that they're not playing this small ball system. I like Chris Anderson, Whiteside, and Haslam coming in when he needs to be in. I really like that. And they still can go small ball, which they did with for about, to my count, it was about 4 minutes they did in the Magic game with Bosch at center. Which I thought was shocking that they didn't play more Bosch at center. I thought just because Chris Anderson's starting the game, I wasn't sure if that would be the lineup ending the game. I wasn't sure how quickly Spo would come off of it. But he stuck with it. And he always had a center on the court, or it was just Bosch for those 4 minutes. And that's they still have that versatility now, which I like a lot, because if they do need to go small, they have a guy that's been playing center for 3 years and Chris Bosch, who can do it if he needs to do it.
Did he match up against Vucevic while he was in?
A little bit. But that was, I think, it wasn't that big of a deal, you know?
No, just never
because is. It was so short. Yeah, you know, it really never is. But, oh my gosh, were you listening to the Sun Sports broadcast last night?
Of course.
They talked more about Vucevic than they did about any Heat player.
I think you're going to have a natural bias about it because you've been somewhat scarred and traumatized by your experiences in the greater Orlando area.
Okay,
am I fair in assuming this? Because I did hear it, but I didn't think it was necessarily as oppressive.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you haven't used that terminology yet, but I know that you're, well, you like I said, you're a little traumatized about the whole kind of Nikola Vucevic fan club mentality about Orlando. They really talked about the fouls, you know, the foul disparity.
Well, he's so good and that he should get some all-star votes. When they said something about him getting all-star votes and should be in consideration for the all-star game sometime in the second quarter, and I think I did mute it for a little bit out of just reaction. Like, it was too late for me to unhear it, but just it was a reaction for me to mute it, and then I just turned it back on. But,
you know, which brings me to another point, and I know I'm going somewhat off topic, which is, of course, what we tend to do here on our podcast. But before the game, a couple of Orlando area, you know, media types like us were tweeting about the, you know, the Fox Sports crew in South Florida, which was, of course, the great Eric Reed and the assistant coach Tony Fiorentino. Did you see that exchange back and forth?
No, what happened?
Well, they basically were saying, you know, when's the game or how is the game going to be broadcast? And they explained that it was going to be the Orlando crew that was going to be handling the game nationally. And they were like, oh, wow, thank God, because apparently the knock is that Eric Reed and Fiorentino are not particularly good broadcasters. And I was genuinely curious. I was like, well, you know, what's the knock on them? What is it that you have to say about them? Because I thought everybody really appreciated them. And I thought that a lot of people even nationally had said, you know, they're a pretty good crew. Maybe that they're a little over the top at times.
Yeah.
But overall, a pretty good broadcasting crew. And their comments were the exact opposite, that maybe that they don't tend to know a lot about players from other teams, that they're very homerish also.
Yeah. They do focus mostly on the Heat. But that's their. I thought I always kind of just assumed that there was their that was their job, you know. And I don't know. I don't really because I've heard mixed things. I've heard that they're really good and that a lot of people just hate them because. And I've heard that because they're too homer about it. They're homers. But I was like, they work for the Heat. I don't understand what else they're supposed to do.
And isn't that the case with every broadcast team?
And they are a little over the top, but I find that when I listen to other broadcast teams, not all of them, but a lot of them, I just feel like it's very bland and boring. Like, don't.
Yeah.
And I think they're just both. There's a certain aspect of broadcasting, regardless of what you're saying, but how you're saying it. They're both good at speaking. When I listen to, like, the Indiana Pacers broadcast, I can't even understand what the color guy's saying half the time.
I'm trying to remember what his name is.
Oh, my God. But you know who I'm talking about, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's like, I'm like, dude, what are you even saying right now? There's some that are just horrible. But I think Eric Reed and Tony Fiorentino are really good. I really appreciate them.
Yeah, the Cavs guy's another one of those types that's just, it's hard to understand exactly what he's saying.
I did a poll on allyoucanheat.com. Not this summer, but last summer, before last season. And it was to rank the top... I don't know if... Were you on staff at this point when we ranked the top 50 members in Miami Heat history?
No.
Okay. So I put Eric Reed and Tony Fiorentino on the list. And it was like something like 75 to 80 people. And we were going to narrow them down to 50 and then narrow it down to 25 and then the top 10, whatever.
Right.
And... neither Reed nor Fiorentino made the list, and I was shocked. I thought one of them would at least make the list.
I mean, is this, like, assuming it's not necessarily just players? Like, could you count Mickey Arison and Pat Riley, et cetera?
Yeah, those guys made it.
That's a little surprising. And I'll say that Fiorentino, I'm not surprised that he didn't make it, just because he's been somewhat on and off as far as... I know he's been part of the broadcasting team for a long time now, but there have been other people filling that void for a long time. And I think for a lot of the quote-unquote Heat faithful... It's Dr. Jack Ramsey. He's going to be the color guy for all of eternity as far as Heat fans are concerned, at least older Heat fans. But, you know, they had Easy Ed Pinckney there for a while. They had Mike Fratello there for a few seasons. I don't know if you remember that. And you know, Fiorentino was on and off. I think he was the guy for a little while there, and then he wasn't. I'm trying to remember who took his place. But, but Eric Reed... I mean, he's been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
How do you not appreciate what he does?
That's who I was vouching for the most, was Eric Reed. I think he's great.
And to your point about, like, other broadcasting teams being somewhat unemotional, who doesn't get fired up when you hear a kibosh?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, this way, that way, Hardaway. I mean, he's got so many. I mean,
Kaboom is great. Kaboom is great. I mean, that's something that could be national. Kaboom is great. His Kaboom is just terrific. With the tip in or with the layup? What's that guy? Never mind. I don't know what I'm talking about. But
I appreciate the invitation.
You're welcome. Maybe that's just my thing. That's what I do.
I
think one guy that doesn't get enough credit, though, is Jason Jackson.
Doesn't he? I mean, I think he's pretty solid. I think he's
terrific. I think he's really, really good. I think there's only a matter of time before he gets called up to the big leagues or something.
Oh, but he already was, though. I mean, that was his whole start. He was a national guy.
That's right, you're right.
And then he came down here when Shaq came over, you know, as part of the big media. And I guess he decided to stay. And I think now he's older. His kids are older. Mm. He's not moving anywhere. Yeah, he loves it
here. You're right. I think he's great. I think it's I didn't appreciate him until the video bomb stuff started happening, and the way he just plays it off is almost like improv actor. It's just he goes with the flow. He's very I don't know why I do this, but I liken him almost to Seth Meyers doing Weekend Update on SNL.
Okay.
I just always felt like Seth Meyers just played off the guest characters that came in really, really well and didn't try to steal the show, even though it's his Weekend Update, right?
Sure.
And I feel like Jason Jackson, it's his stand-up. It's his thing that he's doing, and Chris Bosh will just appear out of nowhere. Dwayne Wade will do a cartwheel or whatever, you know. Gabrielle Union will just show up out of nowhere, and he just goes to the flow seamlessly. He's just really, really great at it. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody got video bombed last season on national TV and just had no idea what to do. I wish I remembered who it was, but she got video bombed and was just really taken aback by it and just like didn't expect it.
You know, who I could picture is like Doris Burke.
I think
like,
it might have been Doris. Yeah,
she's funny and she's pretty quick witted herself. But
yeah,
I sort of see her being somewhat regimented in comparison to Jason Jackson. So that when something goes off, she just completely discombobulates.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it's an underappreciated facet of his that you know he really is flexible. He's sharp enough to keep going. He knows the players. He jokes around with them, and he's never like phased on camera. At least I haven't seen it.
Absolutely, and he asks good questions. It's not the so how'd that one feel?
Right.
That was good. Thanks.
It's a win. So obviously
better than a loss.
Good.
Felt better than a loss, Jason. Thanks.
I'm out of here.
All right.
So now that we've, you know, our shining ode to all of South Florida broadcasting.
You know, I've really wanted to write a piece on Jason Jackson for a while, and I still might. I'm just not sure how to format it. I really appreciate him. I think he's really good. I don't know. I think I've learned to appreciate these guys when I've started watching Warriors games out here, and I just don't like them as much.
I've heard some disparaging comments about the broadcast crew.
Yeah, they're not that good.
Right.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, you know, we should do like a slideshow of like the best broadcasters in Heat history.
Yeah, or just the best broadcasters currently in the NBA and just rank ours number one.
So I really want that list though, and I'm trying. You know who I actually like a lot is the Portland Trail Blazers crew.
Yes, they are terrific.
Oh, wow.
They're really good. I noticed this last year. I'm like, these guys are great. I love them because they actually know a lot about basketball. I learn stuff when they're – I don't learn anything, when with the Sun Sports Crew. I don't know, but maybe that's because I've been listening to them so much. I know their shtick by now, and I know like their common material. I was learning a lot about the Portland Trail Blazers when I was listening to that crew. I thought they always had good information.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was just me, but no. Yeah.
They're really good.
And I forgot, I think the color guy, I can't remember what his name is. I want to say it's Mike something or other, but I can't remember exactly what his last name is. He kind of reminds me of, you know who Stan Lee is from Marvel Comics?
Yeah.
His voice sounds a little bit like him, so if I close my eyes just right, I can picture it's like Stan Lee.
I got to try that next time. You're a comic nerd, you must love that.
I do. It's like every time I hear him talk, it's like, oh, he's going to start talking about the Incredible Hulk and you know, the Amazing Spider-Man any second, you know?
But he doesn't. He talks about Damian Lillard instead, who's like the other superhero.
But yeah, exactly. But so what? I can still appreciate it. And you're right, though. They're a really great team, very underappreciated. And I want this list to happen. I mean, I feel like I'm watching enough League Pass nowadays where I could probably give it a stab, but it wouldn't be like a fully educated one. I wouldn't know the nuances of these broadcast teams. Like Tony Fiorentino, you know, he's not the most – maybe he's not the most knowledgeable as far as the league is concerned, but in-game analysis – he's usually pretty spot on. He knows when something broke down. He knows when a play is going to develop a certain way. So you've got to give him credit for that.
Well, I like the, that's why I like the Portland guys. He's just on the dime. Just like, this is what happened. I was like, wow, you're right. That did happen.
Yeah.
I think by far the best is Brooklyn, though, because I have Ian Eagle, which is almost stealing or cheating because they just got a national NFL guy. And they're like, yeah, you can be. It's like, well, that's not fair. You can't do that. It's not like I can go get Marv Albert.
But I think he's a little too over the top. I don't personally care for
really? Him. I like Ian Eagle.
No, I know. You mentioned it before, but I don't like it.
I must really like him.
Yeah, you have, actually. Yeah.
He's good. All right.
Are we still talking about Heat basketball here?
No, I don't think so. I think we're just going to rename the podcast to the broadcast check or something.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, we're starting another podcast after this. We'll just do that one.
No, we're talking about Hassan Whiteside and what he brings to the table.
Really strong, large hands.
Well, funny you should mention that because I think Tony Fiorentino pointed that out, didn't he?
No, he's spot on. So I actually did a Vine. Did a Vine? Made a Vine? Vined? I don't know.
Did you?
He did this. That steal at the end of the game, Vucevic was trying to post him up, and I forget who passed it, and then he just like went around him. First of all, great positioning to fight for the ball, just got kind of snaked around him and just stole the ball with one hand and passed it back into Chalmers or North. It was probably North Cole at that point because for some reason North Cole's in at the end of the game instead of Chalmers, but that's a whole other thing. And I was blown away. I was like, oh my God, I had to Vine it, so I did. And there was another play where he caught the ball with one hand and was getting, it was maybe right after that where he just caught the ball with one hand on the pick and roll and was getting dragged with the other arm down to the court, and he just still made the layup and then got the free throw for the and one. The guy's just really strong hands. I mean, that's great.
I'm looking at the Vine that you made right now.
Oh, that was great.
And I had forgotten that play, but yeah, it was very impressive. Like, it's correct me if I'm wrong, but it's hard to say exactly how athletic or unathletic Whiteside can be. Like, there are some plays where he just looks like really bouncy for a big man. And then there are others where he looks downright plodding, and it's kind of hard to predict. And it's you know, you figure with a guy that size, there's a limited window there for him before he becomes maybe like really bad Roy Hibbert or something along those lines. Although he's never had any injury issues or anything like that, he's still fairly young. But even that, though, I think is somewhat untrue in that, you know, he's been drafted. You know, he was drafted 3 years ago, so I know he's been in and out of the league for the past 3 years. I mean, how much longer can we keep saying, well, he's a young guy, he's going to keep learning, et cetera, before maybe you just realize he's not going to ever pan out? I think he's made some progress here, and he's really filled the void. And you were mentioning before the show started, and you're all aboard the Whiteside train. I think we all are in South Florida. I think we're all so desperate for a big man that whenever we see somebody like him doing something positive, we're going to be extremely supportive.
Was there another big man that was kind of like this, where you're like, yeah, this guy's great. This is the future center.
You know, off the top of my head, I can't recall anybody. I know that there was a brief time there where Pittman might inspire some kind of hopes. Maybe even Kem Birch.
Right, Kem Birch in preseason. Because you know who I'm thinking of is Chris Anderson. When we signed Chris Anderson, and he was just like this energy guy, refreshing, something that we didn't have on the team before. And he's stuck around. So I'm hoping that's kind of the Whiteside thing here. His free throw shooting is a major issue. But it's also kind of cool to have a hack of somebody for the first time in a long time. I kind of like that. Even though he can't hit his free throws, it's nice to have a hack of somebody. My issue, I've seen that too with what you were saying, though, about sometimes he looks like he's really fluid, and sometimes he just looks like he's stuck in quicksand. And I stole this from Bill Simmons, but his idea is that to judge a center's or a big man's athleticism, look at how they transition down the court. And I really like that, and I've been watching him. And he looks good getting down the court, and he makes himself available, which I really like. He's a center that will put his hand up, he'll find an open spot, he'll get open on offense, he won't demand the ball, but he makes himself available so you're not playing 4-on-5, which I think is the main reason why Spo went with Bosch at the 5 was, number one, because of need, but it just made all 5 guys active scorers and scoring threats, and made just harder on the defense. If Whiteside and Chris Anderson, that's why Chris Anderson fits in really well, because he's an actual scoring threat. If Whiteside could be like that too, that's huge. And I really like that rotation of Anderson and Whiteside. I really like it a lot.
Yeah. Sorry, having a little bit of a coughing fit here.
Oh, that's fine. I'll just keep talking. Well, that was kind of my monologue about Whiteside, though. So. No, but Haslam didn't play last night. They went with a short eight-man rotation. First time this year that they played with 8 guys. Only 8 guys. It was Whiteside, Norris Cole, and Danny Granger off the bench, and I really like that. I think Sean Williams probably would have played if Danny Granger wasn't playing so well. So we could probably figure that that's going to be your core 9 guys, especially with the announcement right before we started this podcast that Shabazz Napier is going to be sent back to the D League. So if your coughing fits over, I'm not sure if it is.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Napier. Well, on Napier, you know, he's obviously fallen out of favor. I think you and I had talked last time that maybe there might be some attitude issues there with him.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of disappointing because at one point, you know, there was so much promise there. He was playing big minutes in clutch time situations, and you had hope that maybe he would take over the starting role. It just hasn't happened, and I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure if he just – I know the assist-to-turnover ratio is always a problem with him, but his shooting had been improved. And he seemed like he was ready to take the next level, and it just never panned out.
Yeah, and Ira Winderman tweeted something like right before we started that they typically like the Heat to move the younger guys to the D League when they have a big road trip coming along because of the lack of practice time, which I get. That sounds like something that he found out the last time that he asked the team about last time Napier was sent to the D League. And that was probably the response he got. So I think that's kind of what it sounded like to me. And that's probably true, but because like the last time they went on a long road trip, they put him in the D League, and now they're going on another road trip right here, and they're moving to the D League. But he didn't play it in a single game during this 7-game homestand, right? Or maybe the first game, I think. But he's logged 0 minutes the last 6 games. So it's not as if he's not going to play on these long road trips. He didn't play at home either. So there's something going on there, and it's unfortunate because they can really use a point guard right now because Norris Cole and Mario Chalmers combined for 8 points in the last game against the Magic, and that's pretty much what did it in, that Victor Oladipo and Elfrid Payton were both able to be effective, and Chalmers and Norris Cole were just not. And it's such a huge weakness on this team right now, and I think more so than in years past where they had LeBron to kind of just be a point guard, and now they're asking Dwayne Wade to do a lot, and he can't really bring up the ball every drive now, and it's a shame because this team, I think, is really starting to come to form, and it would be great if Napier can step it up and just become the starting point guard because he's easily the most talented guy. It just doesn't look like it's happening, and there's questions, and I worry about him going into the Beasley zone, him and James Ennis going into that Beasley zone.
Yeah, because Ennis hasn't played much recently either, with Granger kind of stepping up.
Yeah, which is great. And I'm glad Granger's stepping up, but yeah, you're right. Like, not a lot from Ennis, not a lot from Napier. I don't know if it's just because they're young and the Heat organization tends to lean away from the young guys. But, I mean, Whiteside's getting plenty of minutes. Maybe that's just because of need. I don't know. But it's not like point guard isn't a need. I don't know what's going on. And I'd really like to get some answers, but I can't.
So, you deserve answers, Wes.
Damn it, I do deserve answers. I run a blog. I'm a millennial. I'm entitled to things. So Danny Granger looked good. He looks alive now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, playing a couple of big games there, it looked like he's a legitimate long-range threat that everybody expected when they signed him this summer.
Yeah, he seems a little bit like our Mike Miller now, where I don't know if we can count on him from a game-to-game basis, where it's just, okay, this guy's going to hit a few threes for us, or maybe you could play, like, 30 minutes like he did last night, or, you know, 16 minutes on a night, or something like 4 minutes on a night. I'm not really sure what to expect from him. But yeah, it's nice that he's at least a factor now, where, you know, earlier in the season he couldn't even get off the bench. There's injuries and stuff involved, but if he's a real threat as a backup three, and they were using him as a power forward last night, and I'm not sure if it was a matchup thing, because they like, you know, Orlando has some stretch fours, and they like Granger as a four as opposed to a three, because he was backing up Luol Deng there for a few games before that. But it's good that he can play both. Yeah, they didn't really play Sean Williams that much. But if they have Sean and they have Granger both being able to hit threes, it'd be nice to actually have somebody other than Sean Williams able to hit the three ball this season.
Now, you made the Mike Miller comparison, and I feel like I should know this, but, I mean, Granger wasn't always a three-point shooter, was he? I mean, I don't think his percentages were all that great while he was in Indiana.
Right. He was mostly just a scorer, and I think he's evolved into a three-point shooter.
Which is kind of surprising, and then you're asking him to do that on two unhealthy legs to boot. And all of a sudden, I mean, he was rising up against Orlando. What, he went 6 of 7, I think you mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty impressive shooting display. You gotta have some legitimate range in order for you to be able to finish a night like that. And I'm surprised that he's all of a sudden become this quality three-point shooter.
Yeah, what's nice is that when you go 6 of 7... you get the respect of your opponents for like a couple of games, right? So as long as he's on the court, there's going to be spacing, and that's going to be really nice, especially with this schedule coming up. We have a little bit of a road trip here.
Yeah, well, I know part of it is Fish is in town, so I don't know if you're a big jam band kind of guy, but they're in town over the next couple of days for the New Year celebration. So I think that's what's forced Miami out of the arena.
Oh, really? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, and Fish? Also the circus, yeah, the circus.
Oh, that stupid circus.
Every year.
Yeah, I hate that circus.
So you have the smell of pot, you know, from being burnt during the Fish shows to all of a sudden elephant poop, and, you know, it's a great combination for
probably more pot, engine. Too.
I hear the elephants really like to get stoned.
it really takes the edge off of their day job.
Well, I mean, that's kind of stressful for them. I mean, they have performance anxiety issues.
Well,
that's
how they eat all the peanuts.
They're just nervous? Is that what it is?
Right. Yeah, you know, just to get the munchies and they...
Oh, well, there you are.
Right.
I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah, man. Well, just when they thought they were full.
Yeah. So what is the upcoming schedule like? I know I think I should know this, but I mean, I'm actually woefully unprepared for today's show.
Good. So it's Wednesday. We New Year's Eve play at Indiana, and then which I'm really excited for that game because I always like watching the Heat play Indiana, and they're going to have that traditional lineup. Spoelstra said that they're going to continue with Anderson and Bosch at center and power forward. I don't think anybody really realizes how excited I am about this, that this is a thing, finally. I absolutely love it. But to answer your question, Saturday at Houston, Sunday we're back at home against Brooklyn, but then it's Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Friday is all on the road. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven of the next 8 games are on the road.
That's brutal. But I would have said, you know what? I would have been... You know,
in a West Coast trip, though, that's the thing.
Yeah, but you know what? So what? We had a 7-game homestand. We played like crap. You know, maybe this is, you know, and I think I'm probably going to wind up writing a post about this, but, you know, this reminds me of that episode of Seinfeld, which I think you've admitted that you like or not.
Love Seinfeld.
Okay. Yeah. You remember remember that.
I don't know if admitting is the right word. I think it's a generally appreciated show.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Not like I'm admitting I like Two Broke Girls or something. It's like, yeah, I kind of like the show.
You know, there's this episode where George Costanza realizes that everything he's done in his life is wrong. And if he does the exact opposite, it's the right way. I mean, I think this is the Heat team, though. You know, they have a 7-game homestead. You figure they'll win at least 4 or 5 games of that. No, right. They win 2.
Right.
So maybe the road trip, maybe they'll win every game on that road trip.
Maybe they'll win every game. Or, you know, maybe the circus will replace the Heat and we'll just play with elephants and clowns for the rest of the season.
I think I had a dream like that once and it didn't work out too well.
No, well, I'm surprised. The other thing is that it's all Western Conference teams. I mean, it's Portland.
Yeah, and great ones, too. It's
yeah, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, and the Sacramento Kings. I'm actually excited for that Kings game if they're playing that 4-5 cherry-picking thing. That'll be kind of fun.
No, they haven't actually done that. I mean, I know
they did
that,
it for, that, like, they did it for, like, one possession or something. Like,
and how did that work out?
I don't know. Oh, what's his face? Missed a layup or something.
What's his face?
Yeah, that guy.
Rudy Gay?
No, who's the guy who played for the, why am I blanking on this name? He's a relatively well-known basketball player. Elton Brand. Yeah. Right? No.
For the Hawks?
Nope, it wasn't Elton Brand, never mind. He plays for the Hawks, you're right. He's the player that plays for the Kings.
Oh.
Hold on, I'm going to look this up. Why am I an idiot right now?
Not Boogie Cousins, right?
Of course not. He never misses shots.
I can't believe that you're doing this right
Reggie
now.
Reggie Evans.
Oh, God. I mean, that's a relatively known basketball player.
Is he not? I thought he was.
Is he? I mean, you know, maybe like a...
Well, around the blogosphere. Not like, he's not like a household name, but in like, you know, basketball circles, everybody knows who Reggie Evans is.
Yeah, I think it's the hair and the headband.
Yeah.
Either way, whatever gets your name known.
Okay. So, yeah, they did that, and it didn't work out. They're at the Golden State Warriors on January 14th. I might try to get to that game.
That's a win.
That's put in the books. That's an easy one.
That's
I'm really concerned about that Lakers game the night before, so.
Wait, is that a back-to-back with the Lakers and the Warriors the next day?
Absolutely.
Holy crap.
I know. That's going to be... That game might be a 20-point blowout.
Oh, my God.
The Warriors don't have a chance.
yeah, wait till Steph Curry has to handle Mario Chalmers all by himself.
Oh, my God.
You know, we really haven't talked about Chalmers starting, right?
No. It's working, right? It's but I think more so because Norris Cole is doing so bad, it's working relative to Norris Cole. It's still pretty bad.
Yeah, okay. I'd have to say you're right about that.
I think Alana put out a post about this.
Yes, she did.
This is what's wrong with Mario Chalmers, but we're stuck with it. And we
love him anyway.
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah. Norris Cole's the best thing that ever happened to Mario Chalmers. Mario Chalmers looks like a freaking superhero now.
You gotta have, like, this contrastingly bad player in order to stand out.
I wonder if you're right about Norris Cole. I think, didn't you tell me once that with the goatee he looks like evil Norris Cole now?
I think you actually were the one that said that. Oh, no, you're wrong. Sorry,
no, I would
right.
not have.
I,
yeah, you said that. I just really liked it. I think that's got to be what happened right now because he's not playing like he used to. His three-point percentage is below 30% for the first time in his career, where it looked like he was improving his three-point percentage and his shooting percentages every season, and then this year, just like all of a sudden, just nothing. Like just down the drain. Like what happened? You would think at some point there's got to be a regression to the mean, but it's been 30 games.
Didn't Cooper Moorhead tweet something about that earlier today?
Did he? I didn't see it.
He did. I think he said that something along the lines of the corner three, he hasn't been shooting them the way he did last season. Mm. I think he's shooting a much lower percentage of the corner threes, and that's obviously affected his overall three-point shooting percentage. So.
Yeah, and he's not taking as many, I don't think. I mean, just from the eye test, I don't know the numbers. But, I mean, with LeBron bringing up the ball so much last year, we were able to run our point guards around. And this year, they're not as much. They're just bringing the ball up, and they're more involved in pick-and-roll action. I just don't see – like, I don't even see Chalmers taking that many corner threes.
Well, here we go. Norris Cole, 57% of all of his three-point attempts last year were from the corners.
You
this year –
it's written down? Where did you
– Yeah.
Oh, okay.
27.3%.
Wow.
So a significant drop, less than half as many three-pointers. And wow. I mean, I know it's still early in the season, but and Chalmers hasn't dropped off too much. He was shooting last year 34.5, 33.9 this year. So it's a drop-off, but not as significant. And then overall, 31% of the Heat's threes are from the corners, down from 38% last year. So it's a pretty team-wide drop-off. And again, you know.
And Sean Williams probably makes up what? 80% of those corner threes?
Well, who shot a lot of the corner threes last season? But, you know, Chris Bosh, and he doesn't have to anymore. That's just not his. That's just not the way he's being utilized. So.
Right. Well, now I think, this is one of the things I'm interested in watching. How many more corner threes does he take at power forward? Because you would think it would be more.
If you position Anderson in the low post, I mean.
Correct. Yeah, I just think if you're running your typical guard center pick and roll, then you're allowing for Bosch to flow it out to the corner. And I'm interested to see if that's what they do. Because this is different. This is, with Bosch at power forward, Spoelstra has an opportunity to mix it up a little bit more here and kind of just give this whole team a renaissance in terms of what this offense looks like and just basically everything. And it's not like the blueprint's not there. He can look around the league and see, okay, what are other traditional lineups doing? I think a good team to look at might be the Mavericks. Maybe not.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay, yeah. Because this team, it looks a lot like what the Mavericks looked like last year. This year, they have guys like Chandler Parsons, who's able to hit threes, and Tyson Chandler, and stuff like that. But Chris Anderson and Tyson Chandler are basically the same player.
Right.
And Dirk and Chris Bosh, very similar. I really liken the Luol Deng and Danny Granger to Sean Marion and Vince Carter. A little bit different, but
not Chandler Parsons.
No, not Chandler Parsons. I think Chandler Parsons is a little bit more of an all-around threat than And then,
although Luol Deng has played well of late.
Yeah, Luol Deng's been playing really well. I think he's starting to, I don't think, maybe I didn't give him enough credit. I think he's starting to just figure things out a little bit more.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, maybe getting a feel. He's a complimentary player, and it makes sense that he would have to feel out his teammates a little bit more, and that his performance will be directly related to how the other players are playing, and the other players have been just injured, and there's been so much inconsistencies with the lineup. This is the healthiest the Heat have been this entire season.
And that's with McRoberts gone for the year.
Exactly.
Isn't that sad?
It's very sad. So we'll know that Dwayne Wade will miss a few more games. And probably something at this road trip, right? I mean, I would assume they're all on the road, but who knows. But even so, like, he'll generally play these games. Hopefully Chris Bosh is good to go. And that's what they said. They said they just want him to be 100% ready to go and not have any lingering effects, and hopefully that's what the case was. So, I don't know. I think there's a blueprint here, and I think they can work with it.
I agree. It should be a little bit more dynamic, and that's funny because, you know, we had hoped that with McRoberts early on there that he would be able to add a lot more versatility to the offense. Obviously, that didn't pan out, but I think you're going to see some new wrinkles. And I mean, it's tough because, you know, as you mentioned, there's not a lot of practice time there, so it's not like they could do anything too drastic over the next few days as they're preparing for this road trip, etc. But I mean, they could add some new dimension to the offense, and we should be able to see something turn around. We saw glimpses of it against Orlando. I think there were just some. Was it defensive breakdowns on Miami's part, or Orlando just shooting very, very well? Because that was tough to predict.
Yeah.
I don't know that we necessarily played bad defense, but they were shooting extremely well.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Everybody on Twitter was bashing Miami's defense, but I don't know if that was just looking at the box score and seeing the percentage that Orlando shot. I kind of felt like you felt. Like I thought Miami pretty much had that game. They didn't execute in the last minute. And Orlando was just hitting everything. I mean, Victor Oladipo was hitting threes. It was just
right
there. That's not something that you plan for. I don't think. I just thought that Orlando just shot down the stretch. They were just shooting really well and just weren't missing. And the Heat had an opportunity to win that game. I think what was interesting was the last 4 years, the Heat were in the Magic's position where they were just kind of losing the entire game and at the very end just squeaked it out. And I thought that's exactly what the Heat were just pros at. And just they just got beat by just that last night. And they had an opportunity to win the game on that last shot. And I thought that Spoelstra coached a really good game with the new lineup and everything, and I thought he managed the rotation really well and was right to play Danny Granger so much. He just, sometimes you get frustrated with Spo. It's like, why wouldn't you play that guy more? He's got the hot hand. And he just rode Danny Granger for 32 minutes and just gave him the ball over and over again. But I was a little concerned when they had Norris Cole in there at the last possession instead of Mario Chalmers, because on that last possession, Elfrid Payton, a good defender, helped off of Norris Cole and double-teamed Dwayne Wade and forced Dwayne Wade to take a bad shot.
Really bad.
It was a horrible shot, but I thought, you know, this is the Heat that we have now. This is the NBA. You just give it to your best player, your best shot creator, and you just let him go at the end of the game. I don't know why we always do this, but that's just what the NBA does. But if Mario Chalmers is in there instead of Norris Cole, and I don't know this for a fact, but does Elfrid Payton help so far off of Mario Chalmers?
No, I think you have to respect Chalmers' shooting ability.
So I don't know why Norris Cole was in there for that last. I thought that was a mistake by Spoelstra. It could have cost them the game. I would venture to say, to go that far, that having Cole in there instead of Chalmers may have cost them that game.
And you know, again, it was somewhat encouraging, I think, because, you know, Luol Deng, Danny Granger played very well, which they've been somewhat inconsistent this season. Chris Bosh came back, so you're looking at all these positives. But you really can't afford to take too many just moral victories for the rest of the season. At some point, you actually have to start winning games because we're desperately, you know, sinking as far as the Eastern Conference standings are concerned. And I don't know that we're going to make up much ground, even though as we are, you know, healthier than we have been at any point this season. You know, another injury could come into play at some point over the next few weeks, although you hope that's not the case. The next thing you know, you're out of the playoffs, and you've got teams like Boston and or Orlando that are climbing. Brooklyn might fall sufficiently so that you could maybe position yourself up into the eighth seed again. But you know, you can't just look at a loss like last night and say, "Well, that was a good one," like they did against Memphis. So that was a little discouraging, because I know Memphis is seen as this great powerhouse and everything, but you know, they were coming off the second night of a back-to-back set. They were out. You know, they were missing Zach Randolph, and they still had Miami down 20 at some point. I mean, they were kicking their ass pretty legitimately for most of the game. And then all of a sudden, you know, they wind up coming back within one. Memphis winds up winning by eight or so. And then afterwards, the whole team is talking about what a great, you know, loss it was. It was so encouraging, etc. It's like, you know what? That's crap. You know, maybe I'm wrong in this, but I get the feeling that you can't just continue to take, like I said, these moral victories.
Right.
You've got to get some actual W's on there, because, you know, the season is continuing to progress. Yeah, you could chalk up the early season because of injuries and inconsistency and, you know, getting new players in place. But, you know, we're 30 games into the season now. You can't just look at it and say, well, guess what? You know, we could still continue to make progress. You know, you got to actually win some games. So at some point, they had to turn it around.
I'm actually really positive right now. I'm taking a moral victory out of it. Everything you said is great, David, but I dismissed it.
yeah, it totally shot me down there. I mean, here I am whining on about a couple.
No, but you're right. No, you're right. There needs to be actual W's, and that loss sucked last night. They had no business losing that game. They've blown a lot of games this season, and it's a shame. But I feel like I'm just happy that they're finally going in the right direction here. I think for the first time, they're really figuring out what the identity is. They tried to force it with the small ball thing, and I understand that having McRoberts in there was fine, and that was going to be the identity, was the horns, guys on the elbows, spacing, all that stuff. They were just going to move the ball. It's going to be great ball movement, whatever. It just wasn't working. And Miami was dead, and I wrote this in my post explaining why the Heat needed to move Bosch to power forward. That they were dead last in the league in pace. And I kind of brought this up on Twitter a few weeks ago, and people were like, oh, well, they're just playing good defense, and that slows down the pace, and they don't have LeBron anymore, so there's that too. And I was like, okay, I get all of that. They're not going to be as fast as they used to be.
Right.
But they shouldn't be last. Like, last is a problem. You know, when you're playing slower than the Knicks are, who can't even figure out how to run a triangle. Like, they can't. Like, that's just not good. And they're playing small ball, which is really a scheme designated for fast teams, and I kept thinking, like, this is like the Jets throwing 50 times when they had Mark Sanchez. Why would they be doing that? It's just not the strength of the team. You should be running the ball and playing great defense, which they did. I was just like, saying like that would be what they would. That's what it would be like. It just didn't. You didn't have the personnel for it. It didn't make sense. No matter what they tried to do to push the pace, they were always slow. They ended up slowing the ball down. And when you're slowing the game down, you need to be big. And I just thought that the small ball was so obviously dead. In all the statistics, you would have said, oh, this team doesn't play big. Or this team doesn't play small. This team must have, like, Roy Hibbert and some other really slow guy. So I really like that the fact that they're playing to their identity now, and I think they're playing to their strengths, which is ball movement, which is just having smart players that get efficient shots, embrace that, play small, and I think this team is going to be better. And that's just me. That's why I look at this as a positive. Maybe the Orlando thing was just a bumpy, like, Orlando just shot the lights out in the second half. But I'm positive with what this team is doing right now. I feel good about it in these next few games, despite them being against Western Conference powerhouses.
All right.
That's me. So.
No, I like it. I like that positivity.
That's what this podcast needs, right?
Right. And you know what? I've represented the negative opinion for far too long, I'm glad to see at least one of us has turned it around a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm drunk, so.
That explains it.
All right. Well, let's look at these games. Want to do cereal or not cereal?
You got it. Let's cue up that music.
All right.
That was excellent. I love how the way that you sync that in there was perfect. Okay. So that's really, really nicely done.
Thank you.
Upcoming game, Indiana. Cereal or not cereal? I think we've long established that they are not cereal.
They're not cereal. When Paul George is in there, they're a little bit more cereal.
Yes.
Lance Stephenson makes them less cereal, or not having Lance Stephenson.
Yeah, with him, it's infinite cereal.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm bad at words. but right now, this is not cereal. I think that's a win, right? This team's fired up.
They need a win. Indiana's actually playing pretty well, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they win this game. I don't know. I just have a good feeling. I think Chris Anderson always plays well against Indiana. Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade. They just have more talent right now than Indiana, I think. You're right, Indiana's playing well, but...
Does Udonis make an appearance?
I hope not.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe. Because he's got that lower leg strength that we just can't stop. It's his new thing. It's the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So.
I'd say it's also a win for Miami. Yeah. I think Danny Granger is not a factor, however. I think he's just... The nerves will be too much for him. I don't think playing in Indiana and being expected to be a contributor. I think with the pressure off, it's much easier for him. And going back to Indiana, there'll be some more pressure. Hmm. And I don't know that he'll necessarily be able to respond positively to that. So I wouldn't expect him to have a big game. I'm hoping Lou Alden can stay consistent and have a big game. But I'll say a victory because of Chris Bosh, because of Anderson, because of Dwayne Wade, as always. But Lou Alden and Danny Granger, I don't know that they'll be the factor that they have been over the last few games.
Hmm. Could be a Danny Granger revenge game, though.
That'd be great. Look, I hope I'm wrong. You know, I rarely say that, but I just don't expect it.
All right. Houston Rockets, that's a serial team.
Ooh, yeah, absolutely.
Kevin McHale, Dwight Howard, James Harden, That ranks up there with, I think, one of them.
Corey Brewer and Josh Smith. That's like the most serial combo of all time.
Are they the most serial team in the NBA?
You know, it's almost like you can't be as successful as they've been and still be a serial team. But they're rocking the analytics serial world by storm, I think.
Analyticos.
Yeah.
I don't know. They might... They might be the most serial team in the NBA. I don't know if there is another one. I mean, you just know Dwight Howard goes home and eats bowls of cereal.
Right. Wasn't that his thing with the candy and all that?
Yeah, candy, cereal. He probably just eats, like, probably takes all the little regular pieces out of Lucky Charms and just eats, like, handfuls of marshmallows.
Absolutely. You know he has a team of people who does it for him, too. Like, he probably has boxes labeled by colored cereal, like colored marshmallows, too.
I want all the rainbows in this box.
Right. Purple horseshoes, get that shit out of here.
Okay, so that's a loss, though.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Brooklyn Nets.
Cereal. And
you decided that this was cereal before, right?
Absolutely.
Are they less cereal now than they were at the beginning of the season?
Well, aren't Deron Williams and Brook Lopez coming off the bench now?
Yeah. There's been some changes. I think Lionel Hollins has put his foot down a little bit because of Brook Lopez coming off the bench now.
I would have to say that makes them less cereal.
Yeah.
Like they're a little too structured for my taste.
Yeah, and I think Lionel Hollins is kicking the cereal out of that locker room.
Old Portland Trailblazer like him, I thought he would be all about the cereal, but
just
no,
doesn't
not,
seem
not
like home. It anymore, right? He seems like kind of gritty and I don't know.
I'm disappointed, but yeah. And I also think it's a loss, unfortunately, because I think we've just been too lucky and successful against them this season.
Oh, really? You just have the karma thing? That's why you think
they're
going to lose?
Yeah, because we beat them twice in Brooklyn already, and we had no reason to. Yeah. I mean, I know they're not a particularly great team or anything like that, but...
And it's a home game, and we're horrible at home.
There you go.
And it's Sunday after a Saturday in Houston. That's not good either.
No, it's not.
It's a 6 p.m. game on Sunday. You assume they fly out Sunday morning? Or they might fly out right after the... Hopefully they fly out right after the Houston game. That's what I'm hoping.
So back-to-back losses.
Well, I think they win. I think they beat Brooklyn. So, but
really?
You think they, yeah, I think they beat Brooklyn. I don't know why. It's hard to predict whether... it's like I can't be like, oh, this team's going to play well, because I don't even know what this team's going to do anymore. So I think they beat Brooklyn. These predictions are ridiculous. The substantial part to this is the cereal or not cereal. That's what people should be taking away from this.
We have thousands of listeners that are counting on us for all their gambling needs, man. We need to make these predictions 100% concrete.
All right, well, you should bet all your money on Brooklyn.
There you go.
That's my gambling advice. it's actually one of my New Year's resolutions is to gamble more on sports. So that's perfect timing.
That's a very good one.
Yeah,
I like it.
I didn't think I gambled enough this last year, so left a lot of money on the table. Thursday, January 8th, nice long break there from Sunday to Thursday at Portland. So we're hoping that basically they fly out at the beginning of the week and then have a few days to practice in Portland, stay indoors because people in Portland are insane. And then lose to Portland. That's kind of the plan. I think they win that game. That's a really great break, Sunday to Thursday. That's like a nice little break.
I mean, the team that we had last year, that Chris Bosh single-handedly carried the team to victory Portland. I mean, and they were without Wade and without LeBron. I mean, this team is better.
So is Portland.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Damian Lillard's unbelievable.
And that's been our Achilles heel, the point guard position.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's always been our Achilles heel, and they've still managed to win games, kind of knowing that we're going to get killed at point guard. So if they can lock down on the other positions, and I like... So this Chris Bosh against LaMarcus Aldridge thing might be fun.
That's going to be a hell of a matchup.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think they win the game just because of the break, but the real question is... Are they cereal or are they not cereal?
Definitely cereal.
Yeah, I don't. That's a no-brainer. Damian Lillard. Phew. I don't know what kind of cereal he eats for breakfast, but he's unbelievable. I mean, I can't believe what this guy does at the end of games. He's just unbelievable. I love watching him play. He might be my favorite player, not Heat and not Boogie, favorite player in the NBA.
Well, you know, you've mentioned the Cousins' appreciation and
it's tapered off a little bit with his injuries, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was as extensive as it's been.
I really like watching him.
is it you know, the fact that Miami hasn't had a legitimate center in a long, long time?
I hadn't thought about that. That could very well be like an underlying thing there, like a little, yeah.
Now, I'll be honest with you. I mean, the things that he does are incredible. Like watching a man his size dribble the way he does.
Yes.
And, He's an impressive basketball player, no doubt.
So what are you being honest about?
I'm sorry?
You said you gotta be honest with me. You're just honestly, like, saying he's really good?
No, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought there was gonna be a but there.
I think last year you asked me if I was Boogie, not Boogie, and I said not Boogie, because I had started watching Kings games last season, and I've watched more of them this year, and, you know, despite the injury, from what I've seen, I have to admit that I'm impressed by his consistency.
So he started number one in my league pass MVP rankings. At the beginning of the year, dropped down to number two because Anthony Davis was playing so well. And lately, the way Damian Lillard's been playing, I think Lillard right now is at the top of my league pass rankings. Meaning just guys that no matter what, I'm going to turn this guy on and watch.
No Westbrook?
Westbrook's up there, but I've always really liked Westbrook and enjoyed watching him play to the point where it's like he's almost like already one of my go-to guys.
Okay.
So I don't know. He's probably fourth just because I've watched a lot of him.
Okay.
So I'm just like, I'm really interested just to see, like, I really like the growth that Lillard's at right now. So I just think he's peaking right now at some point where I think this is the point where he becomes like a top 3-point guard in the NBA or something.
Now, that's a pretty bold statement, but it's worth watching.
Well, I mean, my thing with Westbrook, and now Lillard's doing this, my thing with Westbrook was that you might not have him ranked as your top point guard, but you know that on any given night he could be the best point guard in the league.
See, but I don't even think of him as a point guard anymore. Like, I think that's the whole thing with him is that I think what rubs a lot of people the wrong way about Westbrook is that everybody's trying to fit him into this point guard-shaped hole, and that's just not who he is. And, like, he's just the best player on the court at this point in time. I don't think whether he doesn't play to position anymore, so you just kind of have to appreciate what he does.
Yeah.
He has the ball in his hands all the time. You know, they're missing arguably one of the best players in the league in Durant, who's been out for the last seven games, and he's putting up these incredible numbers. And I know it doesn't always work out in their favor, but, I mean, he's just been pretty sensational.
Yeah, I absolutely just love watching him play. And yeah, I don't really care that he doesn't pass the ball that much. I mean, it's fine. Like, it's whatever. Just let him score. That's fine.
He still gets pretty high assist numbers. Maybe not to the totals that everybody expects him to, but, I mean, he's pretty good for 25, 5, and 5 on every night.
Yeah, I absolutely love him. He's up there. Clippers is the Sunday after that Thursday Portland game at Los Angeles.
I'm pretty sure we'll do another podcast before then, right?
Yeah, you're right. We'll probably do one before that Portland game. So we can probably get one in to do that 5-game West Coast road trip. So, yeah, you're right. I was going to go through the entire schedule. I was going to go through the rest of the season before you said anything.
I think what we got left with our record right now is 14-18. So we've got 50 games left. Of those 50 games, how many would you say we win right now?
Oh, wow.
27-23.
That'd be nice. Where would that put us? That would put us at
one game under 500.
41 wins.
40
wins. Okay.
Right. Yeah, because 41 and 41. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Would put us at 27-23. Yeah, you're right. Would put us at 41 and 41.
I knew I wasn't that bad at math. All right, great.
I'm sorry. No, I messed up. Yeah. Is that enough? Yeah, probably enough for the East.
Yeah,
the East
40 wins is enough to make the playoffs in the East. So I think that's good.
You might be the fourth seed for all we know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably not, but...
You know what? I think I'm really not concerned about the seeding right now. We're not going to be one of the top two seeds, so anything below that, it's fine. And I like the whole home field thing, that we've been so bad at home, it's like, well, why do we even care?
More money for playoff tickets.
Well, that's why they care. Why do we care?
Right.
So, as long as they make the playoffs, I'm happy. So, my whole thing this season is seeing some sort of progress, some sort of identity. I really want to see them just try to make the most out of these 2 years. My biggest fear right now, and I'm really overshooting right now, but just looking way ahead, but my biggest fear is these next 2 years is we're just going to be waiting for the free agency of 2016. That's my biggest fear, because I think that's going to be an act in futility. I just don't like it, and I don't think any team should be doing that. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't know that we have the upper hand that we did in 2010.
Right. I mean, we're going to have the cap space, right? but it's not going to be the same Dwayne Wade, and it's not going to be the same Chris Bosh. And you just can't – my main concern is you can't waste 2 years of Dwayne Wade in his prime. Right? You just can't.
Would you still say he's in his prime?
Or like it, prime-ish. Can't waste prime-ish Wade. I mean, he's still shooting crazy efficient. He could still do everything that he used to be able to do, just maybe not with the frequency. And maybe not like the ridiculous dunks and stuff. But for the most part, he's still scoring like he used to. I mean, he was just averaging a shade under 30 points the last two or three games or whatever it was. You just can't waste those years just holding out for this, you know, imaginary free agent haul that you're going to get in 2016. I don't like that. I think that you have enough right now in the East to make a run. You just get the right pieces in place and get the right system in place and finally find a point guard. It doesn't have to be freaking Chris Paul. Just go get somebody that's... If we have the worst point guard situation in the NBA, which arguably we do, if you just have an average point guard situation, that's a huge boost, right? So... yeah, I just think that's kind of what they got to be geared at. Not trying to go get Kevin Durant or something.
Right. So, I mean, if it happens, that would be great, obviously.
Oh, sure. I think they're setting them up. I think there's a way to do it where you set yourself up to be in play in 2016, but also not waste these years, which is what I think they're doing. You know, it's just make sure that you're going to, if there is an asset out there that is a guy whose contract expires in 2017, don't be afraid to pull the trigger on that just because you have this whole thing outlined in your head about 2016. I don't know. It's not like they're tanking. They're still trying to be competitive. So.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But there's a difference between trying to win titles and just middling, which is what the Rockets did for years. All right. Well, that wraps up the podcast. We'll do another one before that. Five-game Western Conference
road trip.
I guess we'll call it a road trip. I think that's not even doing it justice. It's like a torture trip or something. Like it's
the gauntlet of death.
Gauntlet of death. The West Coast gauntlet of death. That's what we'll call the next podcast. Heat check, : gauntlet of death edition.
I like it.
All right.
It's got an edge to it.
I like that. All right. I don't know what I'll name this podcast, but we're wrapping it up. Thanks, David.
All right. Take care, Wes.
You too. Thanks for listening to the Heat Check podcast. You can find my writing and you can find David's writing at allyoucanheat.com of the FanSided Network. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Heat Check. Follow us on SoundCloud. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Give us a 4-star review. If you're really feeling saucy, give us a 5-star review. That would be terrific. We need more reviews, so just go do that. Thanks for listening.